from the studios of WAER.
And he's standing up into the goal line. Touchdown, Syracuse.
Battle gets a screen, pull up, he's good. Tyus Battle from 20 feet, and with 2.5 on the clock, Syracuse leads by one.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside. He scores the game winner. Give the assist to Don Madonna. Syracuse wins 11-10.
Comes the Ostrom Avenue podcast.
To Boeheim, quick trigger three from the top. He knocks it down, and we're tied at Spectrum Center.
15 left. He shoots and scores. Tucker Dordovic.
Perhaps the biggest upset in program history comes on Friday the 13th.
And now, your hosts, Brendan Mortensen and Owen Valentine.
Wide receivers out there. He's got a low snap. Drops back, now steps up in the pocket. Heaves it down the far sideline. He's got a man open. It's Jackson. He makes the catch at the one and dives into the end zone. There's the long ball from Tommy DeVito to his buddy Tristan Jackson. 59 yards, and Syracuse leads 30-13.
From inside the WAER studios, we are the Ostrom Avenue podcast. I'm Brendan Mortensen. He is Owen Valentine. Today we're talking Tommy Turnaround. Did you see all that
Maybe.
Alliteration? Today we're talking Tommy Turnaround.
Okay.
That's what I do.
It's a good start.
Tommy DeVito, we'll start with this. Tommy DeVito, over the first 3 weeks of the season,
Yeah. Is the perfect description, yeah. I think.
Later on in the show, I caught up with Craig Hoffman, who is a WAER alum. He is currently a beat reporter for the Washington Redskins for 106.7 The Fan. It really knows his stuff in terms of football knowledge. So we'll hear from him and his thoughts from the Western Michigan game. But before we get there, there can't be a turnaround unless you don't start well, and that is the case for Tommy DeVito.
Yeah, and I'm going to start by saying I came on and I talked after the first two games really pessimistically about DeVito. And although maybe the immediate reaction was that he is not going to be the player that he was anticipated to be, especially after, you know, leading the North Carolina comeback last season, I think there were really, really high expectations, because even in that small sample size of him at the collegiate level, there were really big moments. So I think coming in, the expectations were so high that it was going to be very tough for him to immediately reach those. And that's what happened in the first two games. And when you kind of look at Liberty and Maryland and Clemson, they pretty much seem like one and the same in the fact that the O-line struggled. DeVito didn't play perfectly. And there were a handful of mistakes where whose fault it was is not really something that can be narrowed down to a single factor. But in general, the number of mistakes made because of the pocket collapsing and because of maybe a rushed decision from DeVito really made it look like he's not playing well. And the numbers do speak to it. I think when you look at probably your second weakest opponent of the season in Liberty, and to see him go 17 for 35, below 50% passing for 176 yards, no touchdowns with an interception. It's not what you really want to see from the guy that is supposed to be the face of this team for the next three seasons. So to kind of get that start and to get off to that start with some questionable decisions and maybe some things that he would take back, it was eye-opening. And I think a lot of Syracuse people watching the game kind of jumped to that conclusion, myself included. I was very pessimistic right off the bat, but I think if you rewatch the game and rewatch some of the plays, you can kind of look into the fact that there are all these other factors, and I think that's what's contributing to it. And then a couple of poor decisions from DeVito is kind of the icing on top of that cake, where you can kind of say that, okay, he is really struggling.
Right, and I think the knee-jerk reaction, especially if you're kind of looking back at a game and looking at the box score,
yeah,
the knee-jerk reaction to what you see is not what you get. Because you could look at that Liberty game and say that, or the Clemson game for that matter, you could look at the Clemson game and see that Tommy DeVito was 15 of 27 for 170 yards and a pick and say he had a horrible game. but he was sacked 8 times. Yeah. So you need the full picture there. Then again, you could also look at the box score for Maryland and say, hey, he was 28 of 39 for 330 yards and three touchdowns with only one interception. But you and I both know that Tommy DeVito was not as good as that box score might suggest in that game. Mm-hmm. And then I think Liberty as well was the game that was probably the most concerning for me regarding Tommy DeVito, where he was just 17 of 35, 175 yards, two picks, and he was only sacked twice in that game, didn't have a ton of pressure on him. That's the game where I really hoped DeVito would play a lot better than he did. But I think the point that has to be made here is that DeVito didn't play great in any of these first three games, certainly. But other areas of the offense were worse. Yeah. I think the offensive line was worse. I think, you know, the running game definitely could have picked up. But the thing with DeVito is he didn't play well enough to make up that difference. You can have one area of your team play really poorly, but if somebody else plays really well, they can mask that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like you saw it, like I'll jump to the NFL real quick. You see it last year with Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans. I mean, that offensive line was legitimately horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, they were one of the worst offensive lines in recent memory. But Deshaun Watson was so good that he made it seem like the offensive line maybe wasn't as bad as they actually were. He covered up their mistakes during games, even though there were a lot of mistakes. And then you look back at the end of the year and just went, whoa, he got killed,
yeah.
Which he did. But Watson was so good that he kind of masked those mistakes a little bit. And that's what's important to keep in mind with DeVito here. So you can put some of the blame on the offensive line, but at the end of the day, DeVito also didn't play well enough to make up for those mistakes.
Correct. And I think DeVito's evasiveness, which is something that I didn't think mm-hmm. he really had in the back pocket coming into the season, really stood out to me in the first three games and then obviously against Western Michigan.
Yeah,
because it could have been much worse.
Yeah.
Yes, he hasn't made the greatest decisions after getting out of the pocket and avoiding the pressure, but it could have been many, many more sacks if he wasn't making these quick decisions to step up in the pocket and get in front of the defensive ends coming around the corner and then to get out into the outside. And kind of those throws on the run has been where I have really questioned the decision-making. And remember 2 weeks ago we talked about how Trevor Lawrence is that NFL-level decision-maker and that it seems like every time he's put into a situation, he makes the right decision.
Right.
DeVito is getting there. You've kind of seen the learning curve. There were much more mistakes early on, and you can see he is correcting these mistakes. I think one of the biggest takeaways for me was even though he didn't play great against Clemson, you saw against Maryland in fourth and goal situations and end goal situations, he would force passes. And that's not what you saw against Clemson. I think it was early on, the first or second drive or something, when Syracuse was in that goal line opportunity, and he threw a ball away because he knows there's two more downs. He knows that he doesn't need to force the pass here. And that was a really big step. Even though, yes, he does force the pass later on in the game into the end zone, he's getting there. The decision-making is improving. Maybe a little bit slower than some people had thought, but you do have to remember, he is not Eric Dungy. This is not your four-year starter. This is a guy who's come in 8 games, some of it garbage time, some of it relevant minutes last season, but he's in the first 3 games of his collegiate career as a starting quarterback, and it is tough to be excellent that quick. So I think the learning curve is getting there, but it is really tough to learn when you've got an offensive line collapsing, consistent pressure being faced. And early on in the season, I was not all that impressed with the receiver's ability to get open, and even some of the play calling was not perfect to be assisting DeVito to get out of this struggle, to work through how quick he's going to have to make these decisions and how often he's getting pressured.
And I think the beginning of the ACC schedule is really going to be where I start to look at DeVito and say, like, all right, what have we got in this guy?
Yeah.
I think once you start to get into the NC State, Pittsburgh, Florida State, that stretch of 3 games is what I'm really going to look at. Because the first 2 games of the season, you can give DeVito a little leeway, I would say. Liberty week 1 definitely didn't look good, but the entire offense looked pretty rusty. Mo Neal had a pretty good game, 89 yards, but he did, a lot of those stats are inflated because he had that 42-yard rush on one of his attempts, so that kind of boosts his stats there. The running backs haven't looked fantastic, and especially in that Liberty game. Moving on to week two, I mean, Syracuse just got shellacked in that game.
Yeah.
And that's a tough situation for any quarterback to be in, especially somebody who's starting in their second regular season game. DeVito had to throw the ball 39 times. The rushing attack picked up 70 yards net total. So the week two against Maryland is a really, really tough game where that entire team just got outplayed. From the offensive line to the defense to just everybody.
I do think that week two game, DeVito didn't play poorly. I think there were definitely those moments where you were like, wow, this is eye-opening. He's not there yet. But I think overall, he played a pretty strong game.
He played okay.
Especially in terms of stats. And I know the stat line doesn't kind of speak to what this game actually was.
Right.
But in that week one against Liberty to week two against Maryland, I do think he grew. And I think that he was much better in week two. It was just very, very tough to keep up with a Maryland offense that was scoring at will against Syracuse. So
right, but in that Maryland game, I was there on the sidelines, and there were just some plays where he looked at it and you're like, come on, man. Like, he had that interception.
The interception was terrible.
Where he rolls out of the pocket and looks like he's trying to throw. I don't know if he tried to throw it out of bounds or was looking to go out of bounds or something, but he just throws it right to a Maryland defender, and you're just you're standing there going, how in the world? I mean, obviously, I'm not talented enough to play quarterback for Syracuse football, or else I would be out there. But from my perspective, I'm standing there and going, dude, how on earth do you make that throw?
Was it Taj Harris? I think it was Taj Harris who kind of just gave up on the play and walks out of bounds, which is partially on him.
Right. And
at the end of the day, if you are DeVito, you have to see that. His back is to you. He is out of bounds. And you can't be forcing that throw to a Maryland defender who's the only one eligible to catch the football on that. So that was a combined effort. Yes, he's got to step up in the pocket. He's got to evade pressure from the start. He gets to the outside. He does what he should do. That's that last resort. That's the pass you should be looking for when you're on the run to the right side of the field.
Right. He should be looking for the hitch, but it wasn't there.
If it's not there, that's when you can't be forcing the football.
Right.
And you especially can't be forcing the football to an ineligible receiver who has now stepped out of bounds. And that is kind of where I think the critique has come in for DeVito, because there have been those forced moments. And I know there's all this stuff that leads up to the moment, but at the end of the day, as the starting quarterback, I do think that you have to make a little bit better of a decision in that situation.
And I think we can just agree in that game that the Maryland game, all around, not good for any of the parties involved.
Yeah, I'm not sure there was anything he really could have done to change the outcome of that game.
Maryland just shellacked.
He has some defensive ability that no one's heard about yet.
Right. And week three against Clemson, I mean, what I'm trying to say is I think we are a little bit too harsh on Tommy DeVito.
Yeah,
I agree. I don't think he played all that well the first three games, but week one, you'll give him a little bit of a pass for it being week one in a new offense. Mm-hmm. Week two against Maryland, the whole team just got their butts kicked. And then week three, you play one of the greatest teams ever assembled in college football in the Clemson Tigers.
And the thing with Clemson, too, is, I mean, he got critiqued in this game pretty hard, but you have to remember, this is the number one team in the country for a reason. Xavier Thomas is outstanding.
I mean,
on the edge rush.
Xavier Thomas, A.J. Terrell, Isaiah Simmons. Like,
yeah.
The offense for Clemson is ridiculous. So if you're Tommy DeVito, you're already playing from behind the entire game. Because you can't expect your defense to hold Clemson to anything less than what they gave up, honestly. Because until that fourth quarter, the defense was playing really, really well, in my opinion. So if you're Tommy DeVito, you're already going to be playing from behind, and you've got this Clemson defense, which is just absurd.
Let me throw a stat out here for you. This
is
put together by Stephen Bailey of Syracuse.com.
Thanks, Stephen.
In the game against Clemson, he was 14 for 25.
Right.
Per Bailey in this argument, or in this article. 2.43 seconds per drop back is what DeVito had before he had to get rid of the ball or run. 2.43 seconds.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Dropped back 38 times, 21 times there was pressure from Clemson. I don't know how you're able to make decisions, and I think that's kind of what might have affected him,
right?
Is that when you're getting pressured so consistently, you never think you're going to have time. So even when the pocket did hold up occasionally, he was kind of forced to make a quick decision just because you can't assume that this one play, the O-line is going to hold up, or Clemson's not going to be able to do what they've been doing play in and play out this entire game. Clemson had their way with the offensive line.
And when you have running backs who aren't getting gains at all.
Yeah.
I mean, the longest rush in this game for Syracuse was 7 yards, and it was Tommy DeVito. So you're consistently in 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10. And when you're getting just over 2 seconds to throw the football, you can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that Craig mentioned when we talked was that one of the areas where DeVito struggled over the first 3 weeks of the season was in those third and long situations when he's forced to make different reads, to go through his progressions, to look at different routes, things like that. That's where DeVito struggled. But he had a lot more time against Western Michigan. He improved in that game. And I talked to Craig Hoffman about that. Let's hear from him.
So I will just jump right into it. To start, we saw DeVito really struggle in the first 3 weeks of the season, especially against Maryland and 2 weeks ago, against Clemson. What did you see in terms of positives against Western Michigan that maybe that make you think maybe he's making a turnaround here?
Yeah, I mean, I think for DeVito, the more he can get involved in the running game and really find a rhythm, better. And obviously a huge part of that too is the play calling. Are you giving him the easy type of read, the RPO type of thing that the Syracuse offense is based on? And when he can do those things, he's really effective, because he is an effective runner, as we saw against Western Michigan, over 100 yards rushing. So he is a guy that scares defenses in that way, and that simplifies things on the passing side. And really, I think it comes down to a numbers game pre-snap. And you know, all right, the box is late, we're going to run it here. They're stacking the box, trying to prevent the run, so we're going to throw the bubble or the slant to the outside. That's how those plays are designed. And when you have better talent, you can get away with those things. And they've done a good job, Syracuse has, recruiting to where in a lot of these games, they're going to have the better talent and get away with that kind of stuff. And you saw it against Western Michigan. You'll see in a lot of games, obviously against Clemson, you're not going to see that. There, you know, you can run an RPO and have a bubble screen. That bubble screen is predicated on making a guy miss on the outside. Well, good luck with that when the corners that they have are the best in the country. And so now you're getting to the part of the schedule where DeVito can just operate this year's offense and use the weapons around him and use his own skills. And I think that you can see some real success there.
So you mentioned the RPOs there. Can you tell me exactly what DeVito is doing pre-snap? So he's looking at the defense. What is he seeing that is determining whether he's handing the ball off to O'Neal or trying to hit a bubble screen to somebody on the outside?
Sure. So a lot of RPOs are RPOs. There's a run-run option, run-pass option. And if they decide to run, he's going to wind up reading one defender. If they decide to pass, he's going to wind up reading another. That initial decision is going to be made pre-snap. So it's pretty simple. If there's more guys in the box than they can block, that means they're going to be light on the outside. And that means you're going to either get man coverage where you're going to throw the slant or the bubble. And it kind of just hides you, whichever play you call it. If you call it the RPO and have a slant attached, a lot of times it's a double slant. Where you have two receivers on the outside, then you'll go that. And it's a matter of which slant is open. And then you're also going to have the bubble. So let's break down the bubble first. And this might get real nerdy, but it's a podcast, so let's get nerdy. So if it's the bubble play, it's going to be that simple numbers game. Is typically one of the linebackers or an extra DB, a safety, for instance, lined up where you have 3 over 2 on the outside, so 3 defenders to 2 receivers. If that's the case, they're going to be lighter in the box. You run it, you don't have the numbers. If it's 2 on 2 on the outside, typically that's where you're going to go ahead and throw the bubble because that extra defender is down in the box. Now, if it's the slant RPO, that box defender, you're going to be reading post-snap. You're going to probably be figuring out, okay, if he crashes on this fake handoff, or on the handoff, then I'm going to pull it. I'm going to throw the slant right behind him. Obviously, if it's, you know, if they do a good job covering, there might be a second slant behind it. And then the other part of that is we've got to talk about the RRPO, or the run-run option. A lot of times, within even if you go side, you know, pre-snap, all right, we're running it here. You're then reading a defender, and it's your traditional read option. And so there's a lot of decision-making that gets, you know, that probably sounded really complicated, but that's because it's a lot of things depending on multiple plays. Really, it comes down to you're reading one player. And if you can simplify that for your quarterback of, okay, I have to do some simple math before the snap, and then after the snap, I have to figure out where one guy goes and then either run or throw. That is way simpler than, all right, I'm taking a snap, and as I'm taking a five-step drop or whatever the shotgun equivalent to a five-step drop, a three-step drop, and a hitch, where is everybody going? Are the safeties too high or too single high? Are they in man or are they in zone? And fully reading out coverage and a progression and all the things that an NFL quarterback is asked to do, snap in and snap out. The RPO is actually fairly simple in terms of quarterback stuff that they have to figure out because so much determining is done before the snap.
So is that drastically different than what we saw the last few years with Eric Dungy? I know Dungy was a lot more of a mobile quarterback. Was Dino maybe saying, all right, you know, if it's an RRPO, maybe Dungy's a little more likely to choose that run option himself? Or is it the kind of thing where, you know, we're really just kind of seeing more implementation of that RPO with DeVito, but more than likely he's either going to hand it to Neal or throw the bubble screen, and DeVito's not really going to be running the ball too much?
Yeah, I think that's part of it is as a quarterback, you know, they all have the same rules, yet they all seem to do different stuff. And also defenses play them differently. So that's the other part of it, too, is you got to figure that a defense is going to respect, say, Eric Dungy, or expect him to run more, so the way they line it up is going to be a little bit different in terms of what they force. But I think, really, you're going to see more RPO probably with DeVito because I think they probably trust him a little bit more. He's brought in as a really talented passer. Where Dungy, it's like, why would we give him the option handoff? He's our best runner. Let's just head and run a quarterback sweep or quarterback power, quarterback draw, all those design quarterback runs that don't really have the option. Some of them wind up looking the same because I will say this, one thing DeVito is great at is carrying out the thing. So if there's, you know, it's an RPO, he's going to might hand it off and run out, or he's going to take that bubble throw after he hands it off. So even some of that stuff, when it's designed, they make it look like he has the option for the defense. When they go back and look at the pictures on the sideline, they're trying to figure out, okay, what do we have to protect against? And it kind of keeps them honest. So I think the play calling probably shifts a little bit with DeVito to be more of that RPO heavy, where he truly does have the option. Or Dungy, I think, because you, especially by the end of his career, obviously early in his career, he was running a ton, he was getting hurt all the time, but he really bulked up and put on enough weight by the end of his career that he could take that beating and that he could run the ball consistently. I think for DeVito, they probably don't want to keep the ball out of his hands as a runner too much, make that more of a special kind of thing as opposed to, you know, it's a side dish, not an entree. And with Dungy, especially by the end of his career, him running was the entree. Him running was one of the most effective plays Syracuse had. And I think because DeVito's got a little bit smaller of a frame, he's probably a little more talented as a passer, they want to keep him from running it and let him throw it a little bit more or hand it off a little bit more.
Yeah, so we saw DeVito have a really effective game on Saturday. He had some long runs. He had, you know, obviously was very good passing the football. Were there any negatives that you still saw in that game, whether it be, you know, things that DeVito was actually doing during the play or pre-snap reads that he wasn't making, things like that? What were there any negative takeaways for you that still concern you about DeVito, even if this was a kind of a bounce-back game for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two big things that are going to be a work in progress for him throughout his entire career, if we're being honest about it. One, you know, I think when he actually, you know, when it comes to a third and long situation and he's got to sit back and read coverage, he's clearly not super comfortable doing it. And that's why, you know, as a play caller, you can try to keep him out of those situations. You can stay ahead of the chains in your RPO game is working effectively. You can just run that stuff all game, and it becomes that situation where if he is passing it, it's pretty much 90% of the time he's going with his first read. You know, and you can tell that, you know, watching a game, even as a fan, if the ball's coming out quickly, that's a really good formula for Syracuse. When he's got to sit back, is my one read there? No. Is my two read there? No. And because his processing speed is high, the chances that he's even going to be able to get to his third read before a pass rush gets there is going to be tough. I think the other thing that is, I would say, is a work in progress. I mean, it's going to be problematic up and down. It's just mechanics are inconsistent. He's a very natural athlete, so everything looks athletic, which is obviously good. But you do want your quarterback, when he's dropping back in the pocket, to be somewhat mechanical, because that creates a consistency as a thrower that is going to be a lot more effective over time. And so I think for DeVito, it just continues to work on the mechanics and screw on a steady platform. Like, he's got the athleticism. It's pretty impressive to throw off platform. So, you know, you think of, in the NFL, a guy like Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate god example of this, where he can throw off of his back foot and swing it 50 yards in the air. DeVito can do some of that stuff, where he can roll out and throw. He doesn't necessarily have to have his feet. But if he can get to the point where he wants to, where spreading his feet is the most effective option, and that he can really get the ball out on time and rhythm, I think you're going to see a more consistent passing game, especially for the drop-back game when they do have to do that stuff. And so I think those are the, you know, they're negative in that he's not as effective as he is when he can hit the RPO and call it coming out quick. But I would really call them work in progress for a young quarterback who hasn't played a lot of football, especially at a high level.
So consistency is definitely a question that a lot of people are going to be having. We talked on the podcast last week about the Syracuse offensive line and just how bad they've been through the first 3 weeks of the season there. I mean, they were ranking, you know, in the bottom third of the country in pretty much every statistic of offensive lines that you would want. How much of DeVito's struggles over the first 3 weeks do you think fall on the shoulders of Tommy DeVito? And how much do you think fall on whether it be the offensive line or, you know, kind of the lack of the running game, which can also work into the offensive line? Were there things that you saw that were just definitely DeVito regardless of the offensive line? Or do you think a lot of it falls on the offensive line or somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be somewhere in the middle. You know, that's the thing you know about football. Like, everyone's got a job, and, you know, one person doing their job at an extraordinary level can overcome someone else doing it at a subpar level. And DeVito hasn't been able to overcome subpar play by his line. And some of that becomes mental. It's, you know, we talked about the mechanics, right? If you're supposed to take three steps, hitch, and throw, but you don't have the trust in your offensive line that you're going to be able to get to that third step, hitch, and step into your throw, then you're probably going to be a little tentative in the mechanics. Your eyes are not going to be where they're supposed to be. You're going to be watching the rush instead of keeping them downfield. And that comes with experience, and it comes with trust. And it's hard to trust, you know, people who are literally getting you killed week in and week out. So I do think that's a huge part of it. You know, you can't just drop back and have perfect mechanics like you do in the drills when there's live ammunition, you know, live bodies coming at you. And I think for DeVito, that's certainly part of it, because they're, you know, sometimes he thinks they're coming and maybe they're not, and that can cause some stuff. But there's also other times where obviously he is actually under duress. He's got to make plays. He's got to use that athleticism. And getting a throw off can't happen on perfect mechanics, because he's running to his right, and when the time comes to throw, he's just going to have to fling it off one foot, or that throw is not happening at all. So the offensive line is a huge part of it. And I think it's just being consistent. You know, if you're going to allow pressure, you know, make it at least where he can step up in the pocket. He had a couple of really, really nice throws on Saturday where he was able to step up in the pocket. The rush came, but they at least kept it wide. They kept it where they're supposed to. And so DeVito could step up into a clean pocket and let it go. And his vision was clear, and all those things that are little and nuanced but really, really important to quarterback play. So I think DeVito, over time, is probably going to kind of adjust to his own line. He'll understand where the pressure is going to come from. Obviously, his coaching staff will as well. And if, you know, if the right tackle, for instance, is really struggling, you can chip with the tight end, you can chip with the back, you can slide protection that way. So maybe your guard's helping and your center's taking on one of the defensive tackles instead of your guard doing that. You know, so there's things you can do in protection that can help with your quarterback. And obviously, the other part of that is getting the ball out quick. You know, if you're running that RPO game, the defense is guessing, you're not going to be flying upfield. So there's a lot of, like, interconnected parts that go there. But I absolutely do think, yeah, Brendan, that the offensive line play has had a big part to play in this, and that once the other stuff will shore itself up.
And last year we kind of saw a lot of games turn into the Eric Dungy show, where, you know, Dungy would throw for 200 yards, he would rush for another 100. Last week against Western Michigan, we saw Tommy DeVito throw for almost 290 yards. Mo Neal rushed for over 120. Tristan Jackson had over 140 yards receiving and two touchdowns. Is this the kind of offense that Syracuse fans should hope to see, expect to see a more balanced attack from this RPO style where, well, I guess if you don't have the threat of the R, you're not going to have much success in the P, because you need to have a threat of both in order for them to be effective when you're reading the defense. Should Syracuse fans be expecting kind of a more balanced attack from this Syracuse offense?
Yeah, that's how this kind of offense works best. I mean, what you're really doing is you're spreading the field horizontally, which allows you to spread it vertically. You're creating space because the defense doesn't, you know, they really have to defend sideline to sideline. And you have to defend the middle of the field against a guy like Mo Neal on the dive. You've got to defend the edges of the line because they might run it off tackle, or DeVito might pull it on a read option type of play where he's running off tackle. You know, we saw obviously him get loose for a long gain early in that game on Saturday. That kind of stuff happens when you can spread it. And then it's not just, you know, tackle to tackle or tight end to tight end. It's literally sideline to sideline, because even though those bubbles might only go for 1, 2, 3, 4 yards, you're stretching the defense and they're having to run all the way out there, especially when you throw it, like, if you're on the right hash and throw it all the way out to the left in college football, like, that's a long way to run because those hashes are so wide. And so a defensive lineman is either, yeah, he's got two options. Don't chase the play and risk, you know, someone missing a tackle and you getting screamed at by your coach because you didn't do your job, or run out there, and then with the tempo that Syracuse plays with, they really can wear a defense down over time. So I think the more you can do, the more you keep a defense guessing, as you said, the parts really play off of one another. You know, we'll see if it, you know, I think last year with Dungy it was interesting because I never got the chance to watch all 22 tape, but you kind of get the sense he's got to be missing some receivers down the field. You know, how is his field vision if he's taking off running that much? And I think that with a guy like DeVito, who they really think is a high-level passer, they bring in as a pretty highly touted recruit, the ability to spread the field and see the field more and get the ball out of his hands and willingness to throw does make this offense ultimately more effective.
And final question here before I let you go. Did you see enough on Saturday to make you think, all right, DeVito is turning this around, Syracuse offense might be turning a corner, this team might be turning a corner, or do you still need to see more over the next few weeks to say, like, all right, I think DeVito's turning things around?
Yeah, I mean, I felt pretty good with what I saw from DeVito. I don't know that I call it a full-on turnaround. I mean, you are playing a Western Michigan opponent that does not have a ton of ACC-caliber players, obviously. They're a mid-level school. A good one, sure, but they are not an ACC school. And so I'm curious to see how that plays out once you have better athletes on the field who can run a little bit better and try to shut down some of the things Syracuse is doing. And then, you know, we'll see, because there's going to be moments where DeVito is going to have to drop back. They're going to need a 3rd and 7, and can you beat out a defense and make the throw? That's the kind of question I still have. In one game, you know, sure, you could probably do it some weeks, but week in, week out, that's the level of expectation for him and a consistency that's going to have to bear out over time. I would say my bigger concern is the defense. They're giving up 30-plus points again after giving up 60 to Maryland, giving up, I don't remember what the final score wound up being against Clemson. Obviously, that's a terrific offense, and they're a national championship-caliber team, so you're going to give up some points there. But defensively, they've got to figure this thing out. I think Syracuse does a good job offensively of playing with tempo while also not going too fast or your defense is never getting a rest. They make the defense kind of engaged, and they'll back off. You know, that's actually another thing I think he does well, is kind of play that tempo game. But you gotta defensively stand out before I feel like Syracuse is a real, you know, top 25 caliber team. They're a bowl eligible team, but I think that those of us that thought, hey, we might be the second best team in the ACC, that might have been a little bit premature. And we'll see with DeVito still being so young, just a sophomore, if maybe that kind of play is still a year away.
Greg Hoffman, WAER alum, Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan. You can follow him on Twitter at Craig Hoffman. Thanks so much for the time, man.
You got it, dude. Always good to chat with you.
I thought it was really cool that he started the game and finished the game with the same amount of interceptions. And that's always a goal of a good quarterback.
Turnaround Tommy with no turnovers, maybe?
Yeah.
No turnovers is good if we're looking at a potential turnaround for Tommy DeVito. It's a lot of T's.
You're with the alliteration today. You're working the T's.
I'm just working on my broadcasting skills, you know.
Alliteration.
That's what we're due here at Syracuse University. We're honing the skills. Tommy DeVito honing his skills against Western Michigan. 27 of 35, 287 yards, 4 touchdowns. He rushed for 105 yards and another touchdown, including that 60-yarder. He was good. He was really good.
I agree. And for Syracuse fans, you do have to remember, every time that you go to harp on DeVito, he is your only option at quarterback right now.
Yeah.
Clayton Welch is not going to come on and really do anything big. So you have to put your faith in this guy. And he is on the learning curve. Give him that. Because he has taken advantage of it. Dungy was not perfect early on last season.
And you had DeVito sitting behind him. So yeah. Everybody who criticized Dungy could be like, well, they could put in Tommy DeVito. Well, no, you don't have that option now.
Yes. So you have to accept that this is your quarterback this season. And when you look at games 1 through 4, he has improved. He's gotten significantly better. Is he to the level that you want him to be at yet? No. And that's not what I'm saying here. But he is doing what he needs to do to improve. Western Michigan, he plays a near flawless game.
Yeah, and
the no turnovers is what you're looking at in that aspect. But overall, I mean, the stat line speaks for itself in this case. 77% passing. That's what you want to see out of him.
From my recollection, I think there was only really one turnover-worthy play from DeVito where he, for some reason, threw it into like triple coverage from Sean Riley. Mm-hmm. But I think that that was on Riley because I remember watching that and going, what on earth was DeVito doing on that throw?
Yeah.
DeVito looked to be angry at Sean Riley. Sean Riley went over to the sidelines and got chewed out by Dino Babers. So my guess is that it was some kind of miscommunication between DeVito, Riley, and Babers as to what route Riley was supposed to run.
Yeah.
Because I think everybody involved was like, why was that football there with no wide receiver in the area? That was the only turnover-worthy play that I remember seeing from Tommy DeVito, which definitely should have been an interception, but context clues tell me that that was probably more on Sean Riley. And yeah. One of the things that Craig pointed out that I thought was really interesting was Syracuse was so RPO heavy in this game to the point where it looked like an entirely new offense, because they didn't run the RPO as much against Maryland or Clemson, or it just didn't look like an RPO because it didn't look like there was any reads from DeVito, because it looked like, you know, the running game wasn't effective against Maryland or Clemson in both cases, probably because you're so far behind. And it's pretty tough to run an RPO when you're down by like 40 points and the other team knows you're not going to run the football.
To get the contribution out of the defense is a huge deal. To be able to be in that competitive game where you don't need to be scoring in 2 minutes every time. You can have a long drive and let the drive develop and go through your reads and make shorter passes. And I think that's what really stood out to me against Western Michigan, is that they were able to run shorter routes. And in doing so, they were able to find guys on the sideline. And in spreading the field out, they opened up a lot of room in the middle. And that's where the slant came in and some good opportunities for Aaron Hackett over the middle. So I think that the play calling really did benefit DeVito here, in that he's able to make these quick plays, these quick reads, and kind of break into the orange is the new fast offense, get that quick pace going that Syracuse has kind of become accustomed to in the past couple of seasons under Dino Babers. And it makes life way easier on DeVito because you don't have to be throwing the 40-yard pass every play. When you get the opportunity, great, and take advantage of it, because you're able to catch guys off guard when you're running this consistent bubble screen type, quick out to the outside type of offense. it allows you to counter a lot better. It helps benefit the run game, which benefits DeVito. It helps open up players downfield when you do want to take the shot deep, which benefits DeVito. This type of pace of play, especially when you can execute it like they did, tailors exactly to what you need DeVito to have to be able to be successful. So in the future, if Syracuse can continue to run an offense like this, getting those quick slants for 8 yards, being in third and short situations, which is nice and beneficial for him, it's going to allow him to really flourish and continue to grow. And when you get to that growth level, then maybe if you're not able to run it to perfection, he's going to be much more comfortable in the pocket, on the run, making quick decisions to be able to find those guys in the not ideal situation. And I think that's exactly what you're looking for.
Right, and that's the idealistic RPO offense.
Yeah.
You spread the defense out horizontally. If they're light in the box defending the pass, hand the ball off. If they're heavy in the box defending the run, throw the ball.
Yeah.
It's a really simple offense for DeVito. He's not asked to do a ton before the snap. It's just read the defense. How many guys are in the box? Are we running or throwing? And if you can run that kind of offense, it can be really simple but really deadly. I mean, we saw it. Yeah. That's the offense Doug Peterson runs in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I mean, he runs a ton of RPOs, so it's not like this is some gimmicky college thing where we're simplifying it for a college quarterback. The RPO is really effective, and we've seen it. It won the Eagles a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, it is an effective form of running an offense, but you can't have an effective form of running any offense if you're behind by that many points. And I think that's the thing that has kind of been overlooked the last 2 weeks against Maryland and against Clemson, is how do you expect Tommy DeVito to run an effective offense if you are down by that many points? Because you consistently have to play catch-up ball, and that's not a way you're going to win.
Yeah.
That's simply not a way you can run offense. So over these next few weeks, like I said, I'm really going to be looking at those first few games in the ACC schedule. At NC State, home against Pittsburgh, Friday night lights under the dome there, and then at Florida State. I think those games are going to be a huge measuring stick for Tommy DeVito, assuming the Syracuse defense can hold them in those games, which I think they should be able to. I want to see how DeVito runs this offense against a decent ACC defense where they're actually in the football game. I don't think this weekend is going to be a good measuring stick.
But the good news for Syracuse is, so they play, I'm going to say, a gimme against Holy Cross.
You would hope a gimme. What's the spread?
38.5 points in favor of Syracuse. Ooh. You would hope they win that game. I think...
You would hope, yeah.
ESPN's Football Power Index gives them a 97.5% chance to win, which is pretty high. So they've got the gimme this weekend. And to their benefit, so they can hone everything in, they can work on specific things against Holy Cross.
Right.
To their benefit, they get the next weekend off. So they play Saturday, and they have an entire 7 days off to next Saturday, and then 4 more days, they play Thursday. So you've got nearly 2 weeks to prepare for NC State. That is really, really beneficial for a team that, when you look at their schedule, the two best teams they play, Maryland, Clemson, they really struggled against. And it makes sense. That's what's supposed to happen when you play good teams. But you've got the chance to prep for a good team at NC State and a good chance to really be able to put DeVito through everything that you need to in order to best prepare him and the rest of the team and the offensive line. It's a great opportunity to maybe get a little bit healthier. There has been some kinks in the O-line. We talked about it last week. So if the O-line can come out a little
bit
bigger.
Sam Heckel's got to come back soon, man.
I know. He's always listed on the depth chart as number one. But as we've seen through
he's
the past 3 weeks, he is not number
one.
He is yet to play. So
I mean, he is vital to that offensive line. We talked about it last week.
Yeah, he is the key to, I think, offensive line success. But maybe you've got 2.5 weeks to prep for NC State and ACC play, and your next really challenge.
And
so,
NC State, I'm
it's
still,
a big opportunity. Yeah.
I'm still waiting and seeing on NC State. I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here with Holy Cross this weekend, but I think if there's one team on the schedule we can get a little ahead of ourselves with, it's Holy Cross. But looking ahead to NC State, They've beaten East Carolina, Western Carolina, and Ball State. And Ball State, they beat by 11 points at home.
Yes, NC State is not amazing.
And they got slapped by West Virginia on the road.
But ACC football is where you kind of bring out the microscope. Yeah, you're going to want to play those games. You're going to want to play those big games. And it's why Syracuse moves to the ACC.
Right.
It improves the schedule. It improves the competition.
And NC State was a tough game last year. They were ranked 22nd in the country. Syracuse beat them by 10, 51-41. But that was the game where Ryan Finley and Kelvin Harmon just had a field day. And luckily, neither of those guys are on that team anymore. But Kelvin Harmon had 250 yards receiving, and Ryan Finley threw for 475.
You remember that game, Dungy struggles early on?
Yeah.
Babers, with one of my favorite coaching decisions by him of all time, puts DeVito in for a single drive.
Yep.
That was the spark. Dungy came out after that and was absolutely electric.
411 yards, 3 touchdowns.
It's not the same team, though. NC State is not at that offensive powerhouse level, but they are an ACC opponent.
They're
a team that you need to win against if you're going to be bowl eligible this season. I think that's a very important game because of the opportunity that it is. NC State is not immune. They're not untouchable. They are a very vulnerable team and a great opportunity for Syracuse to win a game that coming into this season you might have thought was a bit more of a toss-up. And it is exactly a toss-up right now, because even though Syracuse is not playing at the level that you thought they'd be, either is NC State. So they're right on that level. Huge opportunity for Syracuse, huge opportunity for DeVito.
And I think the big thing with it is that Tommy DeVito looked good against Western Michigan.
Yeah.
We assume he's going to look good against Holy Cross. And the reason we're looking at this early ACC schedule is because, as we've looked at Tommy DeVito for the last 40 minutes, I think the first three games in the ACC schedule are going to be the big measuring stick for Tommy DeVito.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we gave him too much slack over weeks 1 through 3, but he still wasn't great.
Yeah.
Maybe better than we gave him credit for, but still not great. And he played well against Western Michigan. The next few weeks are going to determine just how good Tommy DeVito is, what we can expect for the rest of the season, what we can expect for a few years going forward. But that's all we've got here from the Ostrom Avenue studios of WAER Sports. You can catch coverage of Syracuse and Holy Cross this Saturday. Kickoff is at noon. Join us here on 88.3 FM starting at 11:30 with Countdown to Kickoff. Thanks so much again to Craig Hoffman, WAER alum, current Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan. You can find him on Twitter @CraigHoffman. For Owen Valentine, I'm Brendan Mortensen. We'll catch you next time.